I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. This past spring saw the release of a fascinating book on the morning television shows in the United States. A lot of us in Canada find ourselves ditching local programming to see what the American networks have on in the morning. The book is called Top of the Morning, Inside the Cutthroat World of Morning TV. It does for the morning shows what Bill Carter did for the late night shows. It gives us the inside scoop on what was happening at NBC before, during, and after the ouster of Ann Curry as Today Show host, and what in the world Matt Lauer's role was in all of this. It also sheds light on Good Morning America and their struggle and subsequent overcoming of the Today Show ratings juggernaut that saw GMA behind in the ratings for over 850 weeks, some 16 years. Brian Stelter joins me now. He wrote this book and covers the media for the New York Times. You might remember him from that terrific documentary on the Times Page One, where the much-beloved David Carr suspects that Stelter is a robot assembled to destroy him. He's an avid viewer of television news going back to before he was at the Times. His founding of TV Newser is the stuff of legend. Mr. Stelter does a terrific job taking us behind the scenes and illustrating just why these shows matter in the gathering and delivery of news, as well as reflecting the public and what they want to watch. You also get a sense of these personalities and the big bucks involved, what with million-dollar salaries for the hosts and millions more drawn in through advertising. At Brian Stelter is his Twitter handle. This book is from Grand Central Publishing. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in New York, Brian Stelter. Mr. Stelter, good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. I guess for the first time in, 8 months or so, the Today Show won yesterday over Good Morning America because they had Paula Deen on. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. The early ratings showed the Today Show coming in ahead. They had not won in more than 6 months, so they were very excited about that. But it's an example of a case where you don't want to let the trees get too much attention. What really matters here is the forest, to use that old analogy. And that's it's very clear that the Good Morning America is the number one show now among morning shows. And the Today Show is so deep in second place that it has to celebrate whenever it can pull off a one-day win like this.
And so the Today Show's dominance, its decline, was that because of what happened with Ann Curry?
I don't personally think that Ann Curry was the only reason why the Today Show slipped, but it was a big factor. Her hiring and then her firing were both big factors. I think the Today Show was already on a downward slope before Ann Curry was promoted. Her promotion happened in June of 2011, almost exactly 2 years ago. But the downward slope back then was very gradual. It was not especially steep, and it was obvious that Good Morning America was still deep in second place at that point. If you imagine a line graph with two lines on it, you would see the Today Show slowly going down. But you'd see Good Morning America much, much lower, slowly going up. And you could see in that line graph, it's going to be a long, long time before those two lines were going to meet in the middle, where Good Morning America would overtake the Today Show. But Ann Curry's promotion sped up the decline of the Today Show. Viewers didn't seem to like her and Matt Lauer together. And then her firing in June 2012 sped it up even further. The Today Show was already flirting with second place, losing at some points to Good Morning America, and her firing cemented that into place. It was so dramatic, actually, that the day after Ann Curry said goodbye on the Today Show, Good Morning America won by 600,000 viewers. That's, you know, a one-day change of about a million.
Yeah.
And from there, well, Good Morning America never looked back. Ann Curry's removal had cemented the competition's win.
In this book, you tell the history of Good Morning America and how that came about. I guess that was in the 70s and 80s, and its development into the 80s, and then it went through some lean years in the 90s, especially when the Today Show was number one. You also chronicle in this book where how Good Morning America came about with Robin Roberts, George Stephanopoulos, Josh Elliott, and Lara Spencer. Do you think their success and why Good Morning America is doing as well as it is because they seem to get along better? I mean, is that one factor? And if you look at George and Robin, they seem like unlikely morning show hosts.
Yeah.
So
well, if you look at that line graph again, Good Morning America is in second place, and they're slowly creeping upward. But Robin Roberts and George Stephanopoulos were this odd couple in 2010 and 2011. You know, the ratings were improving a little bit, but almost in spite of them. You know what I mean? It wasn't because of them, because they didn't have a lot of chemistry. They didn't mesh very well together. But Good Morning America was slowly improving. It benefited from the Today Show's mistakes, but it also benefited because there were changes to the cast that created better chemistry. In 2011, actually a month before Ancuri was promoted, this was in May of 2011, Josh Elliott and Lara Spencer were added to the cast. And that, around that time, you can see on the line graph, Good Morning America start to go up more dramatically. It was, it was not obvious at first, but when you look back now, you can see Good Morning America was improving more markedly once this cast change happened. And that has a lot to do with the fact that on the air, you could tell that Josh Elliott and Lara Spencer and Sam Champion and Robin Roberts and George Stephanopoulos all really liked and respected each other. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that they became friendly off camera. George Stephanopoulos was usually off to the side. He wouldn't frequently engage in some of the dinners and drinks that the other four anchors would participate in. But that was okay because he's sort of his own brand, his own man. He brings something different to the show. But the other four, Robin, Josh, Lara, and Sam, they would go out to boozy lunches and boozy dinners, and sometimes they'd maybe even get a little too drunk and they would be tweeting. And the producers back at the office would see their Twitter messages and kind of cringe. But that was a good thing. It was good for them to be socializing and becoming friends with each other because it created a sense of trust and a sense of respect that's really important in television. And when the anchors would come on the next morning, they wouldn't necessarily talk about what it was like to be out with each other the night before. They wouldn't gossip about how much fun it was or show pictures from the bar. They would just act like friends. And that's what mattered the most.
Yeah, yesterday when the Supreme Court ruling came out on gay marriage and you had Josh Elliott reach over and hug Sam Champion, I mean, that seemed genuine. That seemed sincere.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't see that on the Today Show.
It is. It's hard to imagine seeing that on the more formal Today Show. Good Morning America is more informal, and it benefits, in this case, from being that way. The anchors all know each other's, in many cases, they know each other's strengths and weaknesses. And that's a real good thing to know. It's a real benefit to the show. And of course, there's going to be petty rivalries. They're going to disagree sometimes. They're going to get mad if one person has more time than the other. That's par for the course in TV. But there's not as much jealousy and bitterness and backstabbing as there was in the Today Show recently.
How much of the sort of gelling that the cast has had it was because of Robin Roberts' illness?
I think Robin Roberts' illness had some to do with it, but I think the gelling had already really begun to happen. The drinks and the dinners and the socializing and the text messaging to each other and the Twittering and I describe a scene in the book where Lara Spencer and Sam Chipman go out and get their get pedicures together. You know, all of that was starting before Robin Roberts came down with MDS, this rare blood and bone marrow disorder that she was diagnosed with in 2012. But her illness did bring the family even closer together. It just as it does oftentimes in a real family. Yeah. If a mom or a dad or an aunt or an uncle is sick, you see the rest of the family pull in a little closer, become a little more tight-knit and supporting of each other. And we saw that at Good Morning America as well. One thing I could never figure out for this book was what happened between Robin Roberts and George Stephanopoulos last year. Because when Robin was diagnosed with MDS, she went to the anchors and told each of them individually about what she was going through. About a week or so before she announced on television to the whole world that she was sick. And the weekend before she announced to the whole world, George sent Robin an email. They will not talk about the email. They won't say what George said in it, but it brought them a lot closer. Everybody around them says that email and that experience of Robin getting sick brought George and Robin closer. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, otherwise it would have been contrived or it might have never happened. But because of the tragedy of her illness, these co-anchors, who were for a long time an odd couple, started to get to know each other better, started to get along better, and started to respect each other more.
In terms of the ratings, I mean, there were cynical people in your business, and chiefly, I mean, you have an email in the book from Jim Bell, the executive producer of the Today Show, who suggests that this was being used for ratings.
that was definitely an opinion within the Today Show at the time, that Good Morning America was using and exploiting Robin Roberts' illness for ratings. And there's always some truth to that, because in television, when especially in morning television, anchors are expected to share their personal lives with the viewers, whether good or bad, happy or sad. So an illness is going to be shared just like a pregnancy or a marriage is going to be shared. And, of course, Good Morning America took pains to cover Robin's illness without appearing to be exploitative. So I think that's worth noting, that although some people would say they exploited her on this for ratings, other people would say they were very careful not to. I kind of think they walked that line as carefully as they possibly could have. But certainly at the Today Show, they believed that this was being exploited. They believed, as Jim Bell put it in an email, that it was one more weapon in the arsenal that Good Morning America was using against the Today Show. I think Chris Licht said it best. Chris Licht is the producer of the show over on CBS. It's called CBS This Morning.
Yeah.
It's the third place morning show in the U.S., but still has a decent-sized audience. Chris Licht said to me right after Robin came out and announced her illness that television producers think in two ways. They have to wear two hats. You know, there's two points of view they view everything from. The first point of view is from a human level, from a normal human level, thinking, gosh, this is terrible for Robin. The other point of view, as he put it, is the network scumbag level. And from that point of view, from the scumbag level, you have to think about how is this going to affect the ratings, how is this going to affect chemistry, etc. And I think that kind of says it all about television. Yes, these people have hearts. They think about the feelings and the emotions of these anchors, but they've also got brains, and they've also got to think about the business. And I think Good Morning America did both of those things when Robin got sick.
Back to Ann Curry for just a sec here, and throughout all of your reporting in the Times and after reading this book, you know, one gets a sense, thinking of the Conan Leno problem, that NBC really screwed up on these two fronts. Do you think, beyond what we know, there was this sort of concerted effort to make them less potent? I mean, at the time that they were in their respective controversies, or their, you know, when they were in the news, they could have easily gone off to another network, done, you know, another show, and you know, fatally hurt NBC. Now, with Conan at TBS and Ann Curry still at NBC, I mean, if she went off today somewhere else, she wouldn't be as potent a television star. I mean, was that something that NBC wanted to do or did?
NBC seemed really eager to make everybody happy when they were trying to remove Ann Curry, and of course, in those cases, you can't make everybody happy. The network wanted to keep Ann Curry there. They wanted to keep her in the fold as a reporter. They didn't want to lose her to the competition. But by doing that, they kept her around in this strange reporter role that made nobody happy. Ann Curry wasn't happy. Matt Lauer wasn't happy. The viewers certainly weren't happy. And in some ways, that's reminiscent of the late night debacle, because when the network decided Leno at 10 wasn't working, they tried to move him to 11:30 and keep Conan around at midnight or something. And you know, that was an unsatisfactory arrangement for pretty much everybody involved. These cases sometimes in television require decisive action by leaders. And there's not always the leaders in place who are willing to make those decisive decisions, so the decisive actions.
So, I mean, like Ann Curry today, I mean, if she went over to CBS, I mean, she probably, if she was available, do you think Jeff Zucker would have taken her at CNN? I mean, she wouldn't be as strong a draw, I guess. I mean, is that an accurate observation on my part? Or?
I think that's true. For one reason, it's because her brand has been stained a bit, or she's been wounded a bit by this whole debacle at NBC. She certainly has fans out there, loyal fans, who want to see her and want to cheer her on, but that's not that group probably isn't as big as people don't want to believe it is. You know, consider the fact that after she was removed from the Today Show, that audience, the swing from Today to GMA, was about 600,000. That would suggest, you know, that's her most loyal fan base right there, about 600,000. I do think that she would have immediately perked up the ratings at CNN if she had been hired there, but I don't think Jeff Zucker would have hired her. Zucker didn't seem that keen on her back when he was at NBC. Yeah. After all, he went out and hired Meredith Vieira, in order to avoid having to promote Ann Curry to anchor the show back in 2006. So she's definitely a talent, and she's definitely a loyal fan base, but she doesn't seem to have millions and millions of people who hang on her every word.
Now, Matt Lauer, he suffered a great deal through all of this. I mean, even before all of this, I mean, he'd get bad press saying Page Six and the sort. He was on Howard Stern, I guess, last week or a couple weeks ago, and he called your paper out as lazy, and I'm assuming he was referring to you and your reporting on him. Was he?
I don't know if he was or not. I assume that he was unhappy with the recent stories that I've written about him and about the Today Show. All I know is that we've tried really hard to write accurate and careful stories about him, and most importantly, conservative stories about him and about the Today Show. And what I mean by that is I try to understate how bad the situation for the show is, because it's easy for people online and the press to overstate the ratings problems and the talent challenges the show faces. So I try to be very conservative in my estimation of what's going on there, and I certainly have tried to be in the paper. But I'm glad that he said anything, because he has been very quiet about what's happened in the last year or so, and I personally wish he would speak out more and tell his side of the story more.
And he refused to talk to you?
Sort of, not really. You know, when I started working on the book, I emailed him and told him about it, and he told me back then, 2 years ago, that he was not going to participate in the book. He was not going to be interviewed. So I always expected he would turn me down for an interview, and I actually didn't think it was a big deal, because anchors, well, they usually can't say what they really want to say. They can't always say what really is on their mind. Let me give you an example of Matt Lauer. Matt Lauer renewed his contract at Today's Show last year, but he wasn't very happy with the leadership of NBC. The bosses he liked, they had left. They had left the network. There were new bosses in charge who he didn't like as much. But, of course, he could never say that out loud. He could never admit that, because he was getting paid $25 million by those bosses. So you have to interview friends and family and colleagues instead in order to get that information. And I always find that in these cases it's more valuable to talk to the friends, the family, the colleagues, because they can say what the anchors can't. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, you're reporting for the Times. When you found out about Operation Bambi, which was the code name, I guess, that NBC had for removing Ann Curry from the Today Show. When you found out about it, you were the first to find out about that, right, and report that?
Yeah.
Right. When you first found out about that, did you think about sort of the ramifications of reporting that? Because at this point, NBC it hadn't come out at all. And when you did report it, it would, put Ann Curry's camp into full gear, that they'd have to start negotiating. Did you think about those sorts of ramifications about your reporting?
I did, and I was concerned about affecting the outcome last year when I reported that Ann Curry was in negotiations to leave the Today Show. On the other hand, I knew when I wrote the story a couple of things. The first was that she had been in negotiations to leave for weeks and months already, and that it was taking a long time, and that it was getting ugly internally, and that it probably wasn't going to end well, even if it remained a secret until she actually left. I also knew that if I didn't write it, somebody else would. The Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post or TV News or someone would write a story about this, because it was starting to leak out. It was starting to leak out in rather obvious ways. So I felt that I was not affecting the outcome, because the outcome was already getting ugly and because it was going to be written about anyway. But that's always an issue for reporters. It's always a challenge they face when they're writing about something like this, especially about negotiations or contract issues. Our intent is not to affect the outcome. Our hope is just to observe and report. And that's what I've tried to do all along with the book.
So when she took her leave a year or so ago, it was said that she would be anchoring specials on the network. She hasn't. I guess she has one tomorrow, right?
It hasn't happened yet. It's sort of funny how little of what NBC said has come true. A year ago, they called her the Today Show anchor at large, but she hasn't anchored. And they said she would have numerous specials in prime time. Well, there haven't been any yet. But actually, her first one is coming up. It's going to be airing on Friday, and it'll actually be 1 year to the day since she was removed.
Huh. I was a big fan of Imus when he was on MSNBC, I still listen to him, but we don't get Fox Business here in Vancouver. That's the sort of morning show that I enjoyed. A lot of that we saw in Morning Joe, which is a big success on cable, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Is it beating Fox and Friends, or is that still Fox and Friends is that still number one?
Fox and Friends is among cable shows by far number one, but it has an audience that is less obvious or visible. Let me try to explain what I mean by that. I won't put my foot in my mouth, but Fox News has about 1 million viewers every morning, and yet Morning Joe on MSNBC, which has less than half of that, gets more press, gets more buzz, gets more attention between Washington and New York. This so-called corridor of elites. In the northeast of the U.S. Yeah, I think that's because Washington policymakers and Wall Street experts and media reporters like myself, editors at newspapers, they tend to watch Morning Joe because they want to get a sense of what those people on Morning Joe are saying, thinking, feeling. And there isn't an equivalent of that on Fox News. Fox News is much more of a populist show, speaking to the mainstream, speaking to the Fox and Friends, speaking to the middle of the country, speaking to middle America. And as a result, it has a much bigger audience, even though Morning Joe gets the so-called more buzzworthy audience, you know what I mean?
Yeah. What I like watching is the CBS program with Charlie Rose, Gayle King. How's that show doing?
They've really hit the sweet spot, because they are trying to do more serious news coverage and hard-hitting interviews while on a network program. So among the networks, you've got three options, Good Morning America and the Today Show, which tend to be softer, especially Good Morning America, and then CBS This Morning, which is doing more serious, more substantial news reporting. The show is growing, even though it's still stuck in third place, as the network CBS has been for many, many years in the morning. But CBS This Morning is growing. It's gained about 500,000 viewers in the last year or so, which is great, considering it only has 2.5 million. That means it's up in some cases 15 or 20 or even 25%. And in television, where audiences in general are on the downward slope, that's great news for CBS.
Now you've been a fan of morning shows for a while. You report on them. Do you have a formula for the ideal morning show?
Well, to me, every one of these shows has to have some sort of mix of news and entertainment. And the mix is different on each one. I would tend to prefer a show that has more news and less entertainment, but a lot of people, most people actually, prefer a show with a little bit of news and a lot of entertainment. And so the battle is always over that mix. It always has been, and it probably always will be in television, between what you need to know and what you want to know. And the people that win, the shows that win, they're the ones that get that mix right.
And I'm assuming you watch New York One in the morning, is that right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, but do you watch, in the course of your job, you have to watch all of them, do you, or?
I need to be aware of what all the shows are doing. What's helpful for me, because I can't watch as much TV as I want to, is to be able to hear from readers on Twitter and on Facebook, to know what they are watching and what they're seeing, because in many cases, they can point me to things that I've missed. I have a virtual DVR, I can pull up any channel I want, and then I can go back and see what I've missed.
Will you write again? Because this is another book, I should say, because this is a terrific book.
Thank you. I certainly hope so. I don't know what I'd want to tackle. I don't know what topic I'd want to tackle next, but I certainly hope to someday.
I appreciate your time today. Congratulations on this book.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Follow Brian Stelter on Twitter. His handle is, one word, Brian Stelter. The book is called Top of the Morning, Inside the Cutthroat World of Morning TV. It's from Grand Central Publishing. It's author Brian Stelter on the line from New York City. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Plata.